and welcome to episode 5 of the Blocks Decoded podcast. My name's Joe, and I'll be your host for today. And I'm here with Gavin.
Yo.
Dan.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
And James.
Hello.
Today, we're going to take a look at Justin Sun's lunch with Warren Buffett. We're going to look at the Indian draft law proposal for 10 years in jail for crypto users. And we're going to take a look at the Binance Drive failure that happened recently. Moving on to some articles, we're going to take a look at the Basic Attention Token and the Brave browser. We're going to compare Cent versus Steemit, and we're going to look at the upcoming Bitcoin halving. So jumping right into it, this week, Tron CEO Justin Sun has paid $4.5 million to have lunch with billionaire investor Warren Buffett. This is just lunch and a chat. That is all there is.
An absolute bargain.
I believe it is the highest value or one of the highest bids ever for this lunch, as he does it yearly and the proceeds go to charity. So some good's coming out of it. But what do you guys think of this?
Yeah, from Buffett's side, I think it's good that he raises money for charity. I mean, arguably, he could donate some of his fantastic wealth himself. But Justin Sun paying $4.5 million for it. Do we even know how long it was? Was it a couple of hours?
Well, he's yet to have a lunch. I believe they've only just set the date, and in typical Tron style, he's announced the announcement. I think he's just said, we've got a date. I may be mistaken, but I don't think he said what that date is yet.
He's still trying to find people to go with him. He can't go until he's got his little crew sorted.
Well, everyone keeps saying they're busy. Like, he invited, was it CEO of Binance?
Yeah.
And a couple of other people, and they keep saying, oh, sorry, I'm busy.
Yeah. They're all passing the buck. One guy's saying, well, I don't want to do it, but ask him.
I believe this is actually, whether or not it's just a measuring contest, or whether he just wants to throw his money around and say, hey, look how much I can afford to go to this lunch. It's on all the major American news outlets. So even if nothing more comes out of it, he's given some money to charity, and maybe a few more people have got interested in cryptocurrency as a result of it.
But not in Tron.
Buffett, by his own admission, though, has been behind on other massive technology changes. Like, he didn't appreciate Google and Amazon before they became like multi-billion-dollar stocks. He even admitted it himself. He said, I didn't get it until they were massive and I was way behind.
Yeah, and he called Bitcoin rat poison squared.
Yeah, which is fantastic imagery.
I think I read he just invested in Apple for the first time very recently, within the last, I don't know if it was months or years, but very, very recently.
So you do have to wonder what Jack's son is actually going to talk to him about. So a guy that is, in his own words, kind of not that clued up about technology and technology investments, who also doesn't particularly like the industry that Mr. Sun is in. I just can't really see what value he's going to get out of it from either side.
Yeah, I believe many people are speculating that they're going to try to change his mind on crypto, which to me sounds like seven guys are just going to jump on him and just be like, this, 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 and this, and he's not going to get a chance.
They're going to shill every coin under the sun, aren't they?
Okay, so the headline is Warren Buffett sees value in Tron blockchain is what everybody's hoping it will be. But to be fair to him, he's given it a good shot. He's not going to back out of it because he's done this for money to go to charity. And whether or not he changes their mind, a couple more people may hear about, certainly about Tron. Whether or not they like Tron is a different matter. Maybe we can discuss that in an upcoming episode.
For sure.
So moving on to the Indian draft law proposal. So this week it emerged that India are potentially planning a 10-year prison sentence for anyone who uses cryptocurrencies in their country. And there's been some controversy over this, not just because it's a very extreme sentence, but I believe it's the National Bank of India. And a few other people are coming out to say, well, actually, we don't sort of really know what's going on with this law. So some people are saying it's coming in. Some people are saying it's a draft. Other people are saying it's a load of nonsense. But there's certainly been some stirrings about this.
It's just in a similar vein to the to the story we discussed a couple of weeks ago about the US senator who was talking about a similar, taking a similar line on the topic. And this, I mean, from what I understand, it's a just been introduced. I don't know the Indian terminology for political bills, obviously, but it's a very new bill and it's a long way from being passed. But it shows that there's a sentiment there that people want to, you know, want to do something about it and want to maybe tax it at the end of it. Maybe that's their ultimate goal, to get even more money out of it, to strike a balance, start at one end of the negotiating table and meet them in the middle.
It just seems so underhand, though, doesn't it, that they're on one hand allegedly bringing in this bill. The draft bill name is Banning Cryptocurrencies and Regulation of Official Digital Currency Bill 2019. And within all of the same reports, there's the speculation over the digital rupee, that India's central bank, the Reserve Bank of India, are allegedly developing at the same time. So on one hand, it's you're not allowed to use cryptocurrencies, but it's going to be you can't use them until we have introduced our own version of it, so we can try and corner the market. But it's not, it's just not going to work. I mean, any time anybody tries to ban something of this nature that's already so well known around the world, it's only going to drive adoption and drive people to alternative choices, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, do you think that maybe it's not even that complex? Maybe it's something simpler, that the people in one department are trying to make their own and the people in another department are trying to stop it, and they haven't spoken to each other. They're just like... yes, no, yeah. Maybe.
Was it Occam's razor? It's just something much more simple than everybody's speculating. And it can be explained with a much simpler explanation than a massive conspiracy.
That said, it wouldn't be unusual for India to be pushing their own digital technologies. So they've got one of the biggest ID programs in the entire world, called, and I'm probably going to butcher this, I'm very sorry, Aadhaar. The English translation means foundation or base, and it's an ID card that has cost really quite a lot of money, and it currently has 1.23 billion people as of last summer on it. So it's an astonishingly big technology project, and it's had some glitches, but it set a precedent for the Indian state to be quite, you know, they had their own stuff, they have their own technology, their own ways of rolling it out. So like you said, it wouldn't be impossible that they want to ban other cryptocurrencies while then also introducing their own digital rupee, which would also make sense since they got rid of a load of cash a few years ago and forced everyone to cash it in. So it, all things kind of point that way anyway. So I guess we'll have to wait and see what it actually says, because it's a private members bill at the moment, so I don't think the text is public.
As Gavin said, how would they even stop it?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, say they could stop it, you could just send a WhatsApp message and, I mean, according to this source we're reading, many people actually have their friends buy it in other countries anyway.
Right.
So,
I don't think there's a way.
So what do you think of India's potential draft law for banning cryptocurrency users? Send us a tweet at @BlocksDecoded. James, it sounded like a penny whistle when you stood up. It was like, whoop, whoop.
Oh, sorry, it might have been the chair. I've got an office chair that sort of goes up and down.
Okay, so moving on to Binance. Recently, Binance sent out a tweet in their usual style that they detected a disk failure and they gracefully shut down their systems to prevent any data loss or corruption. They will update regularly on their progress during this maintenance. We apologize for any inconvenience and that funds are SAFU, which is the traditional Binance sign. Started as a typo and then a meme. And then if we look onto the Binance website, they've shared a post about a system maintenance that they have recommenced trading, withdrawal, deposits, and all other account-related functions. They have completed the maintenance. And so the disk failure has been replaced.
When did this happen, Joe? I'm sorry?
No, this was 4 days ago as the time of recording, on the 7th of June.
Okay.
And so everything's
How long was it all offline for in the end?
We don't actually know. A couple of hours, perhaps. Certainly no more than a day. But what do you guys think of this, in that everything is fine, but as we keep talking about, you shouldn't really keep your funds on exchanges, as we saw with the Binance hack a couple of podcasts ago?
I find it strange that a single, presumably what sounds like a single disk failure could bring the whole of Binance offline. I'm not a server expert by any means, but having a massive exchange go down on the basis that there was a... Does it say like a single disk failure that, and it's brought the entire site down? That doesn't sound right.
Don't think it says single, but it does only refer to a disk failure. So I guess we're meant to assume it's a single failure.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have said they shut down to prevent any loss.
Hmm.
But you are right. It does seem suspicious that generally you'd expect a big company wouldn't just have a single point of failure. And you'd expect other big companies, like if we look at Stack Overflow or Netflix, they can just take out entire servers and keep running.
Mm.
Mm. So you'd kind of hope, you know, what's going on with Binance there?
I would like to assume that it is just that, that there is just the basic server issue and they did shut down to protect the data. The obvious reaction, given the recent history of Binance, the hack early May, definitely gave a lot of panic to a lot of people, I think. Definitely a lot of people on Twitter and various crypto forums, mad speculation that there'd been another major Binance hack and that people were going to wake up with a lot of missing funds. But I monitored my own accounts for a few hours after it all started going on, and there was nothing untoward. You could even trade for a short time after the announcement went up, and then trading came back up quite quickly afterwards as well, I thought. So,
I mean, I think if you take a step back and look at this, services, financial services going offline is not that uncommon. I mean, there's been countless times I've not been able to get on my online banking because something's wrong somewhere. So probably shouldn't read too much into it, I think, to be honest.
The only thing that I find a bit weird is the way that they announced it. So there's one small tweet that we've got, and then the blog post announcing that it had come back up. And so they've not used many words, but they've used gracefully shut down. I mean, what kind of ways are there to did they lay it down on some cotton wool and let it die peacefully? And then
yeah, they put a pillow over its face and
slept
away into the night.
Trying to get out there, digging a hole in the dark of the night. I don't think for crypto users, and especially users of Binance Exchange, there's anything to worry about in this instance, though. Everything looks healthy and normal, really. I mean, well, I've still got my meager amount of crypto on there, so I'm happy.
Well, I mean, it's as you say, Joe, if anything, it's just a lesson in not to keep your funds in exchanges, isn't it? It always goes to the show. You don't want to lose access to your funds. Who knows? It could have been offline for weeks, you know, in the worst case scenario. Who knows what could have happened? So,
yeah, exactly. We talk about this all the time, but we are also people who probably have funds on Binance right now. I know my excuse is I just recently bought some more.
Yeah, that's usually my excuse, although I haven't had the time to take it off just yet.
Yeah, well, it's a very time-consuming process, mate, so we can understand. We sympathise.
But if you'd like to learn more about the best ways to protect your cryptocurrency, if you look in our show notes, we have a link to our Ledger Nano X review and Nano S reviews, which are some of the best cold storage wallets for storing your cryptocurrencies, in our opinion.
Absolutely.
Check it out.
So moving on to some of our recent articles, we're going to take a look at the Bitcoin halving. So if you don't know what this is, it effectively reduces the reward you get for mining Bitcoin, and it halves it. So instead of 12 and a half Bitcoins you could get potentially for mining, you'll now get 6 and a quarter. And what's interesting here is this doesn't happen until next year, mid-2020. But Litecoin has potentially got their halving coming up in the next couple of months, and the Litecoin price is absolutely going crazy with speculation, because traditionally the price halves, the supply is limited of new Bitcoins or new Litecoins into the market, and so the price goes up, supply and demand. And so while we're not making any guarantees, if we look at the previous data with Bitcoin starting at 50 Bitcoins reward and then it halved and the price went absolutely crazy, $100 to $1,000 in a year. And then the second halving, it halved from 25 to the current 12 and a half. And again, it went from $1,000 to almost $20,000, this time in 500 days. So who knows what's going to happen when it halves next year? Will it go to nothing?
Is that phenomenon repeated on other coins, Joe? You mentioned Litecoin there. Has that happened across the board, or is it a Bitcoin specific thing?
I don't actually know the data for other coins. Obviously, we've written this article about Bitcoin specifically, but okay. I would think it is mirrored, but in different time frames, because obviously Litecoin's had a spike along with the rest of the market, and it's currently experiencing a spike in the lead up to this current halving. Mm-hmm. And so, as a way to...
I was going to say, some coins use like buybacks and then coin burns instead of halving to maintain inflation and keep people mining, don't they, rather than halving.
Yes. So this is just Bitcoin's upcoming halving. And as I said, there's a lot of excitement about it. It's going to the moon. We can all have Lambo. But what's very interesting is this halving will continue. Mathematically, it could continue forever, right? But with only so many Satoshis around, realistically, it's going to stop halving in about 120 years. At this point, you'll only get paid your transaction fees for mining. So we're way off there yet. But it's a really good way to drip feed new Bitcoins into the market. And along with the increasing complexity of mining, you're going to get less rewards. So the supply and demand dictates the price should go up. And interestingly, one final point is that this happens every 4 years, like the Olympics, and it's every 21 million minutes. And there's only 21 million Bitcoin. So, almost like somebody designed Bitcoin.
Dun, dun,
Those meddling kids.
So do you think this is, contributed initially to the recent Bitcoin price rise? The fact that the halving is sort of now firmly on the horizon?
Yeah, in my opinion, perhaps not. Maybe like 5%. I believe it's certainly going to contribute to the price of the speculation as we get into next year, along with some of the other things we've discussed in the previous episode of our podcast, like BACT and the Lightning Network. And as all those things and institutional investment starts coming online, perhaps next year, it's going to be a really exciting year. But this year, perhaps not. We're still at the very early stages of it.
Nice. Well, could be the ideal time to buy now whilst it's still below 10,000, or could be on the moon next year.
I mean, it's been flatlining been bouncing in a range there for a fair while now, so probably not a good time to go one way or the other. See which way it goes, see which way it breaks and go from there.
Yeah, well, we had that spike, didn't we, about $2,000 increase a couple of weeks ago. And now it just kind of goes down $500 and back up. So never really making progress at the end of the day. But we'll see. We'll see where we are at the next podcast recording. So moving on to Dan's piece, Cent versus Steemit, the social networks, or should I say decentralized social networks, which are becoming more mainstream. So Dan, what is the best blockchain-based social network?
Yeah, so I thought I'd take a look at two of the ones that are gaining the headlines at the moment. Obviously Steemit, which has been around for a bit longer, since back in March 2016, and Cent, which is the new kid on the block, and it's been gaining quite a lot of traction so far this year. Have you guys visited them? Have you been on either of them? Do you know what they're all about?
Well, I've been on Steemit.
I've posted on Steemit, but yeah, not on Cent yet.
Have you managed to make your first million from doing that yet?
No. I sent myself some Steam powered stuff so I could maybe put my own articles, but then I realised I was getting so few readers, it probably wasn't going to be worth the investment at the time, which is maybe an issue for the platform itself.
Yeah, I mean, Sense in a similar boat if you go on the site there. I mean, the layout's slightly different, but they're using tags to organize content. You know, the content stuff like photography, memes, music, obviously all very popular. It's best to imagine it as part Twitter, part Reddit, part Medium. You know, it's a real mixed bag of things. It's much like Steam it is. Obviously, a lot of crypto content on there as well. And but there's two big differences between them. One is the way the tokens work and are distributed, and the second is the amount of money that you can earn off them. And you touched on that a minute ago, Gavin. So the one of the big differences between them is the amount of money that you can earn on the two different networks. The top three posts on Steemit for the month are $178 to $127 and $214. So, you know, you have got to be producing a lot of content, consistently good quality, to be able to earn any kind of serious income from them. Sent, the people seem to be earning a little bit more, $663 in the last 30 days. So,
it's a fair amount.
The top that you, yeah, it is a fair amount. That, the top user there who'd earned $663 has earned almost $4,000 on the site today. So, he's obviously producing content that people are liking. I don't know exactly, but as I touched on a second ago, they're paying out in Ethereum on Sent and in Steam on Steemit. So I don't know if the price of Ether is going to affect that, and Steemit's obviously worth less. I don't know if that has some bearing on how much people can make out of it. But I mean, to give you an idea, Steem is currently, well, it has a 52-week high of $3.50 nearly. So I mean, it's way below what Ether is. And so which is the best? I mean, it's still Steemit, isn't it? Let's be honest. It's 3 years older. It has more backing behind it, more users, has more content. But it's interesting. It's cool to see these new sites arising, and Sent hopefully will be able to find its own niche as we go forward. You know, it's definitely worth checking out.
I really like the Sent layout in comparison to Steemit. You do get much more of a relaxed vibe from Sent, like you were saying, how it definitely has that crossover between Medium and Twitter, the way you can sort of browse through a mixture of memes and articles and you can quickly find stuff. Whereas Steam, it does come across a bit more serious, doesn't it? You're looking at lots of crypto articles, and lots of blockchain-related stuff, which is really interesting. But Sent, on my initial look, seems to have a bit more variety for more people.
Yeah, for sure. It's a little bit more Reddit-esque. You can see how much the posts are earning there. If you're looking at the homepage now, you can see in the top right of each corner. So it's not a great amount. The top ones there, $1.62, $2.28. I mean, there's ones down in the 20s, the 30s.
Mm.
So you've really got to get one to fly to be able to earn a good amount out of it.
It's not a lot of money, but then when you consider, like, so for us, we're professional writers, so we would expect to get paid for the content we write. But if you're a regular user and you're posting on something like Reddit or Twitter, it's unlikely you're monetizing that. So the fact that you're getting paid anything is probably slightly offset, you know, compared to those other more centralized platforms.
For sure. Yeah, I agree.
And so, Dan, do you think there's room for social media influencers on these networks, you know, like the Instagram and the YouTubers who have maybe a million followers? We can command their army to do their...
I mean, I'm clicking on the very first post there, the person who's authored. It's called by a user called Falling Feathers, and they have 29 followers. So, they're a long way from the millions of Instagram and Twitter. But who knows, you know?
That's almost as many as me on Twitter.
people find their niches, though, you know, and it only takes a couple of people to become popular. Let me see if I can pull up very quickly the leaderboard there. Here we go. The top user there on the leaderboard that I mentioned earlier has 186 followers. So I mean, he's
not, okay. So it's not, you know, big numbers, but if you can make a decent living or some decent pocket money off that many followers, maybe there's potential there.
Yeah, I mean, if you're good at social media and you can exploit it, as James said, you know, why not try your hand at something where you can earn a few dollars for it.
So then there's other decentralized but not blockchain platforms like Mastodon. And Mastodon's a Twitter alternative. And that started off very small as well. But over the last year or so, as people have found that they dislike the mainstream platforms like Facebook and Twitter, they've been moving there. So that user base has been growing, and blockchain is still unfamiliar to a lot of people. So I'm sure as people become more aware of it over the next couple of years, there will be significant growth in blockchain-based social networks, just as there has been for Mastodon, because there's a learning curve to have with them. Like the payment structure for Steam it is quite confusing. Like I've used it a couple of times and I still don't get it.
I agree.
So, you know, if there's going to be a learning curve, then it's going to take a little while for people to join in, but maybe eventually you'll get there.
Were you writing full posts on there, James?
Oh, I wasn't. I think Gavin was.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
I was running a security monthly piece for the Blocks Decoded sister site, makeusof.com. But it didn't continue, so I switched to writing it over at Medium. And Medium and Steam it, so I could compare the two. So I was writing full posts, but I think the nature of Steemit, like I said earlier, it is really heavily crypto focused. You can write other stuff, but I think a lot of people are there exclusively for cryptocurrency, blockchain, and otherwise. So the security stuff there didn't get nearly as many views as it did over at Medium. I mean, we're only talking like handfuls of views anyway between both platforms, but it was notably fewer at Steemit.
So there you have it. It's possible to make money off these decentralized social networks, but there's not exactly mountains of people clambering to give it to you.
Everyone said that about Bitcoin when it started, that, you know, getting on the ground floor, Gavin, that's what I say. You're doing it right.
I'll build my following. I mean, if I can get more than 29, I'll be quids in, won't I?
Yeah, there you go, man.
Moving on to the Brave browser and the Basic Attention Token. And this is Brave Software's decentralized advertising program. So what's it all about, James?
Yep. So for anyone that doesn't know, Brave is a Chromium-based browser. So Google Chrome is the most popular web browser in the world, but it is also open source, or at least the Chromium, which is the open source part of it, is. And anyone can build a Chromium project, and that's what Brave is. So Brave technically works with websites that are built for Chrome and some of the extensions that are built for Chrome and that kind of stuff. So it's a viable alternative if you don't want all the Google tracking stuff that comes with Chrome, but you also want all your websites to work. And it made its name a couple of years ago because by default, it had an ad blocker in it. So it blocked all advertising. And then it came up with some kind of vaguely convoluted program about displaying its own regulated ads. Now, clearly, Google, being the world's largest advertising platform, wasn't very happy about that, and neither were a lot of other people. And so it didn't really get off the ground very well. But just around the same sort of time, so that's 2017-ish, you know, Bitcoin and other blockchains are becoming quite big. And so they started looking at something called the Basic Attention Token, or BAT, which is a cryptocurrency and digital advertising platform all in one. So BAT is based on Ethereum, just like the platforms we discussed earlier. And Ethereum is the second biggest blockchain in the world and has 450 million transactions in just 4 years. So it is a very large platform, but its main benefit is that it can host decentralized apps, or dApps. So BAT is a platform that's only available on the Brave browser. Now, the browser, this is where things get a little bit confusing, is that Brave hasn't been very clear on how they worded and named features. So the browser has a feature called Brave Rewards, and that allows you to support the sites you visit by giving them bits of money. But that is actually separate to BAT. So BAT is a feature of Brave Rewards. So it's how you pay the sites that you're visiting. So it's not actually a cryptocurrency. It is a utility token based on Ethereum. So the only reason for it to exist is to be used on this blockchain-based advertising platform. Both the platform and the currency, or the token, are both called BAT. So they've actually followed Google in coming up with ludicrous names for things that nobody will ever understand and will get very confusing in very short amounts of time. So although it's only available in the Brave browser, they do note in their white paper that they see BAT as being a component of web standards in the future, allowing ads to be targeted by locally analyzing their browsing history. So none of the data is transferred from your device or stored elsewhere. It's only done on your computer locally. So in the current reward, in the current market, you're not rewarded for your exposure to ads. So the exchange takes the bulk of the income. Only a small percentage is paid to publishers and creators. So under the ad platform, you're rewarded with the utility token based on the attention you pay to the adverts that are displayed. Now, it all sounds very convoluted, but basically you get a bit of the token for however long you spend on a site and look at the ads that are displayed to you. The BAT is then stored in your Brave Rewards wallet and is distributed to the publishers that you browse based on the attention that you give them. So say if I was to look at Blocks Decoded for 80% of my time, then 80% of my accrued BAT would go to Blocks Decoded at the end of the month. That said, a publisher has to sign up to BAT Rewards in order to get any of this money. So it can be accrued before a publisher is signed up, but if they don't sign up, then they don't actually see any of this money at all. Now, to make that even worse for the publisher is that if they haven't signed up and they aren't being paid, then also if someone is using Brave, they're not seeing the ads either. So they're being withheld the ad income that they would normally get. So it's not looking that good for publishers at the moment. However, if people were to adopt it, then it'd be great. But there's where we kind of get to another problem, is that Brave is not a very big web browser on its own. As of May last year, so that's just over a year ago, it only had 1.4 million active users. When you compare that to Chrome's user base or Firefox, or in fact, pretty much any browser, that's only a tiny fraction of the amount of people that would be browsing the web. And then to make matters worse, they then have to opt in to Brave Rewards and use BAT, and then also buy some BAT in order to distribute in the first place.
You have to add code to it as well for it all to work as well.
Exactly. So there is a lot that has to be done rather than just opening a website and getting some payment. Everyone has to do quite a lot of work in order to do that. Now, if you could cash out the BAT, that would be kind of okay, because then you could exchange it back into fiat or whatever, but you can't actually with BAT. It is an omnidirectional token, so you can only pay into your Brave Rewards wallet and you cannot take any out.
So once it's in there and you earn it, you can't then withdraw it and switch it into Bitcoin,
into
fiat?
No.
Nothing?
Nope. So it's literally tied into the Brave Rewards platform. So as you can imagine, not that many people have gone to use it. I've been trialing it out, but bluntly, there's not many publishers that have signed onto it that I browse. So most of my money is just sort of sitting there at the moment, not really being used. And so I did only pay a small amount in because of obviously you can't take any of it out. So I wasn't going to tie up a lot of money in it. But none of it's been distributed anyway. So it's just sitting there after about 2 months. So it's an interesting idea. But whether anyone is actually going to adopt it, I'm not very convinced.
Are the user numbers at least trending upwards, or is it just...
They've not given any indication of how many people are using it. And the 1.4 million active users thing only came from a small Reddit post from one of their software engineers. So they've never actually given any official stats or usage stats. And even if you were to go and look at some of the web browser share statistics, Brave gets lumped in with Chrome because it's Chromium based. So you can't actually whittle it out and see how many people are really using it.
I can't.
Do you think there's room for such a project in the future? So if it was easier to use and loads of people started using it, does it have a potential there, or is it going nowhere?
I think there's going to be too much backlash from Google and Facebook and the other big ad platforms to ever realistically get it off the ground. It's an interesting idea. And certainly, there doesn't need to be an exchange sitting on top of everything, taking all the money from publishers. I mean, publishers and creators getting money is a huge problem at the moment. And there's loads of sites that are going down. Creators can't make the content that they want. You know, no one's getting paid to actually create stuff. But ad platforms are getting tons of money to show ads. And then also all our data is being taken in order to display us targeted advertising. So there is a problem. But whether that is the solution to it, I'm not really convinced.
It's very interesting, isn't it? When you put it like that, very, very interesting.
Yeah, I think a good example as well is how advertising revenue, like you say, can so rapidly shift. There was the recent Google core algorithm update, and hundreds of sites have lost, you know, massive amounts of traffic, haven't they? So What was the crypto site? Was it?
Yeah, so Crypto Coin News, CCN. Whether or not you like that website or not, they've announced that they lost 90% of their revenue when Google's algorithm changed on the 3rd of June. And considering we're just over a week after the 3rd of June, it does seem a bit bonkers that they've decided to close the site after a week of lost revenue. It's like, do they not have any reserves at all?
90% though. I mean, imagine if that happened to our sister site, Make Use Of. I mean, it would cause huge problems.
Well, I mean,
you know, how quickly
Make Use Of did lose a lot of money, didn't they?
I was going to say, last year, was it last year or 2017, there was a massive change, yeah, and Make Use Of got hit really badly by it. So it definitely does happen. But like you said, you should make...
90% though, man. That's an incredible drop. It's an incredible drop.
Fight back against the 90% drop of your revenue overnight. Perhaps give it more than a week, maybe? I don't know, but it is a massive drop.
Yeah, we don't know for certain whether they, you know, how much money in reserve they do have, or whether they just, maybe there were other things going on, they just said, let's just end it now, rather than waste all this money trying to build it back up, which they've spent years doing. And so, with that said, that is the end of the Blocks Decoded podcast, episode 5. Thank you so much for tuning in. And if you visit our show notes, you can see links to all of the content we've discussed, plus much more. And if you make sure you visit us at Blocks Decoded on Twitter or blocksdecoded.com, or you can use our personal Twitter handles. So for Gavin,
at Gavin Spavin.
For Dan,
Dan's Twitter is Dan Price Tech, I believe, at Dan Price Tech. I will just double check that whilst we appear to have lost Dan. James, like what's, a zombie. That? What's yours?
Yeah, so I'm Jim Jam Through, which is FRO.
Or you can tweet me at Buttery Video. So that's all for this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next episode from all of us here at Blocks Decoded. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, guys. Bye.